Okay, let's do it. Good morning, ladies, gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting, the June 8th, 2005 of the Napomo Community Services District. This time I would please rise and join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Bagnuta, would you please call the roll?
Director Worthing.
Here.
Director Trotter.
Yes.
Director Wynn.
Here.
Director Eby.
Here.
President Verheyen.
Here. Thank you very much. At this time...
Hi. Come on in.
Is this the meeting?
Yes. This is the meeting. Okay, at this time we'll be opening it up to public comment for any item that is not on the agenda and... but is within our purview and... the public is limited to 3 minutes. Mr. Blair.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Blair, 1449 Dale Avenue, Summit Station, Aurora Grande. On May the 2nd, I submitted a request for a will serve letter for a secondary residence at my residence at Dale Avenue. I have a meter in the street that all fees have been paid on. This meter is can be turned on for a $10 fee. I would like to use this meter to construct a granny house. Since I applied for this, you have approved a will serve letter for my neighbor up the street at Dale Avenue, who also has a meter. His meter was, I think, installed in the late 90s. So at least in the late 90s, you must have had capacity to install meters for secondary residents because that was his second meter. I would respectfully like to have some decision on this so I can move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blair. And Commander Basti from the SLO County Sheriffs.
Good morning, Mr. President, board and staff and members of the public. Martin Basti, Sheriff's Department. Couple things, made it through the first of our three holidays. Memorial Day went well. We supplied some extra folks for parks and beaches to get some training as well as getting some folks, extra folks on the beach with the influx of people. Went very well for the weekend. We did have a shooting 3 weeks ago down here in Napomo. It has been resolved. There's probably going to be no prosecution. The victim is not real forthcoming, and this was over a stolen stereo that got out of hand. So that's been resolved and kind of an isolated incident. A few car burglaries around town, either unlocked or a couple of window smashes. The new record system is in place, and we're building our new database as well as using the old database. This also, the advantage is it also ties in with seven other police agencies in the county. So we can review theirs, they can review ours. You can't make any input updates, but this way it keeps track of those that are out there responsible for the criminal activity, plus pulls our statistics for deploying our folks. Coming up on the 20th, we have our budget hearing, which we're going to be going to get our additional folks. And then with the refund money that is supposed to come back to the county, we're looking in August to put together a plan to look 5 years down the road as far as staffing and personnel, especially with Woodlands and a few other projects that are coming forth, which will add increased responsibilities. So we're looking ahead down the future. Yesterday, if anybody you saw, about 11:30, we came through town with a torch run. So pass it off to Santa Barbara. It's on its way through Santa Barbara this morning, and it'll be landing in Long Beach next week for the Southern California Special Olympics Games, which are going to occur next week. So with that, is there any questions, problems, issues?
Any comments, questions from the board?
Just waiting for the 4th of July to get here and get past another
public holiday. Have any comments or questions for Commander Basti? Well, with that, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
CDF, again, Captain Felix Camacho representing.
Good morning to everybody. Captain Felix Camacho standing in again for Battalion Chief Dan Anderson, who's on vacation. Pretty quiet the last month. Total between the two fire stations, the Napomo station here and the West Mesa station, was 120 responses. Normally we run close to that out of just this station here, so we were a little slow, which is good. On top of that, we have officially declared the start of fire season. We now have a second, what we call a Type 3 or a four-wheel drive brush firefighting engine, staffed 7 days a week, with a minimum of three people out of this station here. That engine is it's a wildland response fire engine. However, it is fully complemented and outfitted to handle structure firefighting as well as medical calls. They have an automatic defibrillator and that kind of stuff on there. Everybody's an EMT. So it's basically, it gives us a fully staffed, fully equipped second engine out of this station here. And several of the firefighters that were on, we're going to come down here this morning with us and introduce themselves. And as we were rolling down here, they got punched out to they're responding right now to a grass fire out on Highway 166. So that's probably the start of many for the summer with all the grass and everything. They've had several in the last couple days around here that have been small and haven't done too much yet because there's still quite a bit of moisture in it. But with the wind and everything we've been having, it's going to dry quicker. We've continued with our what we call our LE38 inspections or our weed abatement clearances. We started with the Lopez Lake area and have since completed that. Completed Upper Los Barros Canyon. They are now, as of yesterday, working in the Sway Creek area. In the past, we've always asked to maintain a 30-foot minimum clearance around structures. We've increased that for Upper Los Barros Canyon and Sway Creek this year to 100 feet. So they'll be enforcing that this year, a 100-foot minimum clearance in those areas, or any area that we designate a high fire threat area. And certainly those two canyons meet that. They're doing that in four-wheel drive pickups, most of the Sway area. The fire engine will be out doing the Rancho Napomo, Sheehy, North Dana Foothill area this week. And that keeps them close to town for responses, and we send the what we call volunteers and prevention out in the pickups to do the rest of the outlying areas. At the same time, they GPS all addresses out there. Any landmarks, water supplies, road issues, lock gates, that kind of stuff. So we'll have all that information. And we do that every year, so we just continually update that. We have also, with the fire season starting, we've also staffed all of our other CDF state fire stations with those Type 3 brush firefighting engines, as well as all our hand crews are on board now, and our air attack base in Paso Robles with two air tankers and an air attack spotter plane. And those are all staffed now and available. The last thing that I have is we've completed our chipping event for the year. This was our biggest year yet. We had 290 signups that we completed, and with that we chipped in excess of 300 tons of green waste material. We're still waiting for the total amount, but right now we're looking at over 300 tons of green waste material that was chipped at 290 residences, and that was encompassed the entire West Mesa and then Napomo and eastern side, everything. And that completed on Friday, and all the deadlines that we had set up for that were met.
Great.
And with that, that's all I have. If there's any questions from anybody on anything.
Any questions, comments from the board?
Hopefully next time we'll have our new seasonal firefighters and the other staff that can come in and introduce themselves. And I don't know what turned out, but they are responding right now to that fire out there. So it was quite a ways out there, so that's why we didn't have to go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Captain Camacho. Any other public comments for items not on the agenda? Seeing none, then we'll close it to public comment and come back to the board for our consent agenda. Mr. LeBron.
Well, thank you. Morning, President Verheilig, directors. Before I give a brief overview of the consent agenda, I'd also like to bring your attention to a memorandum of supplemental items that everybody found in front of them this morning. That includes a number of items that have come or initiated after your agenda was sent on Friday. The first four bulleted items, which include a memorandum on low pressure incidents out at the Black Lake Division, and two draft memorandums, one on unmetered construction water procedure and one on extreme water bill procedure. And finally, a summary of task orders. Those four items I'll cover in the manager's report. And then finally attached are three documents that we'll cover in the closed session that relate to the Maria Vista Estates and ongoing issues. The consent agenda. The minimum consent agenda, if you will, today. We've got warrants and board meeting minutes, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or receive comments on those two items.
Any comments or corrections from the board on the consent agenda? Mr. Eby?
I have two changes, one on page one and one on page three. I've given these in writing to the acting board secretary. What they are is on page one, item C, where it says, Director Eby stated that intent to serve letter stated the project would be subject to district fees. I wanted to add in between two and district change in, which means that the intent to serve letter would be subject to the change in district fees, which is the case in this case. The other item was on page three, E3. I'd like to reword that first paragraph. I believe what I said was Director Eby stated that the county failed to recognize level three, period. He repeated the Board of Supervisors' list of questions that county staff was directed to work through. This wasn't my list, this was the Board of Supervisors' list. That I was just repeating that this is what the staff was asked to work through. And then down in the numbered section under E3 on 2, just to clean up the language a little bit, should say after any new GPAs that increase the water use over the current general plan, then strike that those GPAs. And then that it would say the general plan be required to offset excess water with supplemental water. And under item three, I don't think it was any conditional land divisions. I thought it was any new land divisions. And then after supplemental water, period, and then strike the following words and how to implement that. I don't know what that means, and I just don't know what that meant. And then finally, below that, under Clara Bergman's discussion, stated that she got the impression that the district, my read was that she said the district wanted to annex, not was ready.
Hmm. Yeah.
But she said that she got the impression that we wanted to annex.
Right.
And I've given these changes in writing so that they can be adjusted. That's all.
Okay. Any other corrections? Mr. Wayne?
Just one on page three of the minutes that Mr. Eby just referred to. At the top of the page, number two, I think our position has been any new GPAs that increase water use over the general plan of May 2002.
Oh, good. Yeah, over the May.
General plan of May?
Of May 2002. That was the update that we used as our starting point.
Okay.
Larry?
Mm-hmm.
I this is kind of a general rule.
Mr. Trotter.
There's reference often in here about yesterday, tomorrow, today, and so forth. It's better to refer to specific dates because the reference is difficult. We're talking about yesterday to tomorrow. Very general comment.
That's fair.
Okay. Any other corrections, comments? Okay, then need a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended?
I move we approve the consent agenda as amended.
And a second by Mr. Wynn. Okay. Would now like to open this up to public comment. Thank you, Mr. Sykes. Seeing no comment, we'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Bognuda, would you please call for the vote?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Yes.
Director Trotter? President Verhaeghe?
Yes. E1 is our water and sewer rate ordinance. This would be the second reading and adoption. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verhaeghe. I'll give a brief introduction here. We'll have an overview of the process by our rate consultant. Then we'll open, is that when we open a public hearing?
Yes.
Is that right? Then we'll open a public hearing. That's a protest hearing. And then once we have our public hearing, we'll close our public hearing and look for a board decision. Basically, this process started about a year ago. As your staff report outlines, the Finance Subcommittee met and identified funding or budget deficiencies and a need to review our rate structure and fees. And in August of 2004, we hired the Reed Group with Bob Reed as a principal. And in January 2005, we expanded our rate study to include capacity numbers for our supplemental water specifically and then district capacity and connection fees. Over the course of this process, we've held 5 public workshops here in this board room with the board and with our rate consultant to discuss and understand and craft our rates. In addition to that, on May 5th, staff held 2 community workshops where we went out into the community, both the Blacklight community and the town division, and shared the work that the board had gone through to come up with a proposed rate structure. And these community workshops came after the proposed rate structure was introduced, the first reading, and we did a mailing to every one of our customers, and that was actually 3,687 mailed announcements of the proposed rate change, and also then along with that an announcement of the community workshops time and place. And finally, we had one additional meeting that was on May 31st at the request of a subcommittee of Black Lake customers, and District Council and General Manager, along with President Verhaeghe and Director Trotter, met with a subcommittee of the Black Lake residents here at the office to further discuss the rate and specifically impacts that the ongoing groundwater adjudication have on our rates. Throughout the process, we've had 5 specific goals, and that I'll read through those just quickly, the bulleted items here on your staff report, that rates would reflect the cost of providing water and sewer service to the existing customers, that our rates would maintain affordability of basic water and sewer usage, that our rates would be acceptable to customers as reasonable and fair, our rates would encourage all customers to conserve water through effective rate structures, and finally, that our rates will conform to limits of the billing system. While our rates reflect an overall general increase, another item that we looked at closely was looking at our rate structure for equity and changes where we had inequity in our past structure, and Mr. Reed worked to improve the equity of the overall rate structure. And I think two significant changes came along those lines, and that's for our commercial customers. Their sewer rates. In the old system, of course, we had dwelling unit equivalents that were calculated on connection and then used to define their monthly sewer rate. And in our new system, what we're proposing is to have sewer rates linked to the water use and to the strength of the type of commercial customer we have.
And the other significant change would be for our multifamily residents and commercial accounts also, where we have a real variable water use per connection, that water use will go to a flat rate water use as opposed to our two-tier system. And that flat rate approximates the same cost as the two-tier system to the average user. With that then, I'd like to introduce Bob Reed, who will give our overview again of the process. I better bring up his slideshow for him. And
we have it. Usually the problems I can't use.
And you know how to get the that's bottom center, I think, is the mute button. Bottom center, right by the laser. There we go.
Good morning, President Verheilig, members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here with you once again today. I'm going to summarize the rate study process that we went through, and in particular the recommendations related to the water and sewer rates. That's really jumping.
Getting out of control? Yeah.
There we go. I got it. Mr. LeBrun just talked a bit about the study process and the number of meetings that we had going through this process. We did start with workshops last October and had 5 workshops with the board to discuss various financial and rate as well as capacity charge issues. While that's not an action item today, we did update the district's water and sewer capacity charges, including developing the supplemental water capacity charge, which is new for the district. So it brings all the elements of the district's finances together. So through this series of meetings, including the community meetings that we had in early May. The goals that we were pursuing with the financial planning process were to make sure that we're covering the day-to-day operating and maintenance costs of the system, including administrative and debt obligations, to make sure that we didn't have any ongoing deficits in the financial situation to correct those. We also incorporated future costs, including supplemental water costs, which will be coming online in the next couple of years as that project proceeds forward. So we were reflecting that in our financial models. We also talked about some reserve policies, what our appropriate level of reserves to have in the water and sewer systems, and currently we're below where we would like to be with those, and so we're looking at steps to bring those up over a 5-year period back up to prudent target levels that we established and reaffirmed. And then also to make sure that we're supporting on an ongoing basis an ongoing capital replacement program through contribution from the rate base. And we did that based on the 5-year CIP that the district had developed. And to accomplish all of these financial goals with minimum increases in the rates and to smooth that out over time as much as we could, looking at a 5-year planning period. So a pretty broad scope with respect to the financial analysis, and it took a while to get through all the details of it, but I think it was helpful for everybody to go through it and gives us all a better understanding of where we are and where we need to go. I just wanted to comment, one of the underpinning elements of the financial analysis has to do with our water supply mix and the need and the commitment of the district to incorporate supplemental water in the water supply strategy to supplement the groundwater with water coming from Santa Maria. And this graph, which you've seen before, summarizes the mix of 56% surface water, 44% groundwater, to be a mix that we think will not have an impact on the underlying groundwater basin, which is one of the requirements of the district. The costs associated with the supplemental water, both capital costs as well as ongoing operational costs, are reflected in the analysis with the presumption that this water would be available to the district within a couple of years. Some general findings of our analysis. First, with the sewer systems, both the town and the Black Lake systems are in stable financial condition. The Black Lake system does have inadequate operating reserves below the target levels that we'd like to see for the sewer system. But even with that, we're seeing just modest rate increases, annual rate increases on the sewer side for both town and Black Lake divisions. On the water systems, both the town and Black Lake divisions have current operating deficits, so we're taking in less money than we're spending each year. We have inadequate operating reserves, and the balances continue to dwindle because of the deficit. And we're looking at future costs, particularly on the water side, due to supplemental water. So for both the town and the Black Lake, we are looking at significant increases over the next 5 years in order to stay on top of these financial obligations. Within the town division, summarizing both the water and sewer increases, these are the overall level of rate increase for the water and sewer systems for the town division. We're looking at 10% water rate increases for a couple years, 1 year at 12%, and then it tapers down slightly to 8% over the 5 year period, and then 4% a year for the sewer system each of the next 5 years. For the Black Lake division, same on the sewer, 4% a year, keeping those to moderate increases, more significant water rate increases. And this is because of the financial situation, and as Mr. LeBrun had indicated earlier, when this study was first proposed about a year ago, it was in recognition of the financial situation primarily within the Black Lake water system. And we're finding that because of the deficit situation, because of the extremely low reserve levels, cash balances within the water system for Black Lake, that these rate increases are really necessary, and we did what we could to mitigate those, but those are fairly significant rate increases, 25%, and then gradually being reduced down over the next 5 years. We believe that after, we only looked at a 5 year planning period, but this should correct that situation so that after this 5 years, we would be back to, you know, some normal future increases and not be on this level of magnitude beyond this 5 year planning period that we looked at. I want to get into more specifics on the rate structures themselves. First, the proposed water rate structures. We've got different rate schedules for both town and Black Lake, but the same sort of structure. And that includes a service charge as well as a litigation charge for all service connections based on the size of the meter. We're not recommending any change to the litigation charge, that continue to help cover the costs of the ongoing litigation and mitigation costs associated with the brown water issue. But adjustments to the service charge are included in the analysis. We're proposing maintaining the two-tier rate structure for single-family residences with a breakpoint of 40 100 cubic feet, 40 building units for the first tier, and then a higher rate for the second tier. We're increasing the step there a little bit, even though we're keeping the breakpoint the same. The step from the first to the second is increasing for two reasons. One, that helps provide a little bit more of a conservation incentive, and two, we were cognizant of that first tier is really for the non-discretionary, necessary human consumptive needs of water use, and trying to mitigate the rate increase for that basic water service with a little higher increase for that more discretionary use of water in the second tier. And then also we proposed simplifying the rate structure for the multifamily and non-residential customers to go to a uniform rate structure without the tier. Is a little bit more equitable because of the wide variation in water use that we see in those customer groups. So that was recommended as a result of discussions that we had. This slide summarizes the town water rate schedules for the next 5 years with adjustments each year. The first year, the FY05-06, includes those rate structure changes, and then in subsequent years it's just increasing the rates based on those overall adjustments that we had talked about previously. And you can see here at the top the bi-monthly service charges changing based on meter size, and then the commodity rates, and at the bottom the litigation charge, which stays constant throughout this 5 year period. Similar schedule for Black Lake with the changes in the rates here. One of the things in that two-tier structure, we tried to reflect in a general sense the difference between the cost of groundwater and the cost of supplemental water, to reflect the fact that supplemental water is more costly. So that went into the analysis as well. Turning next to the sewer rates. Oh, excuse me, one more on water rates. This slide compares the proposed rates for this coming year with the neighboring communities. And for both the town and the Black Lake, that with this proposed increase for this coming year, we're still at the low end of the spectrum within the region. And so that's a helpful thing to see. Moving on to sewer rates, more significant rate structure changes proposed here, not so much for single family, where we're proposing maintaining a single flat rate per, you know, one dwelling unit equivalent for a single family home. That's not changing. For the multifamily customers use less water in the house than a single family home. And we actually looked at winter water use data when irrigation would be at a minimum of single family versus multifamily to use that as the basis. Right now, under the current rates, multifamily dwellings are charged the same as a single family dwelling for sewer service. And because of the less water use, the less sewer flow that's being contributed, it's really fair to have a lower flat rate charge for the multifamily customers. So that's what's proposed here. And then in the non-residential, again, more of an equity issue than anything else. And the flat rate based on DUEs is really pretty subjective and based on an estimate made at the time the connection is made. And what we've proposed is something that's more commensurate with the water rate, where there's a fixed service charge and a commodity rate based on water usage for the non-residential customers. One, it provides an additional conservation incentive because their sewer bill will be based on water use, but also is more equitable between the different customers because it is really charging people based not only on the amount of water use, but the type of business that they are and the quality of the waste, the strength of the waste that's being contributed to the sewer system. And we've defined a low, medium, and high strength categories for each of the non-residential customers and went through account by account and shared that with staff so that we can set that up. This will cause some changes in what people are seeing on their bills for these non-residential customers, but it is really in the interest of better fairness and equity between the customers. Again, this is
Bob.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, just a quick question on that one before you go away. If a business comes to us, staff has assessed them as being a high strength source, and they say, well, we're really a medium strength source. Do we have any way of quantifying that, or is how would you see that playing out?
Sure. A couple ways to get into that. The written report that you have in the Appendix B at the end of the report has a table that is a bunch of information compiled from throughout the state, from state agencies and some of the larger regional sewer agencies, wastewater agencies that describe for different types of business classification, whether it's a hotel, a restaurant, an office, retail, different types of industrial processes and so on, what their BOD and suspended solids typical factors for what the strength characteristics are for their loading. And it's a pretty detailed list, and you can go through and see that.
I did see that.
Okay.
And I understand it. But this hypothetical business says, look, that's a state average. We don't fit there.
Right.
We're different. This is Napomo.
Right. What I have suggested in working with staff as we went through and we looked at this list, we looked at the type of business that it was, each accountant kind of said they're high, medium, or low, whatever we feel in our judgment it is. If somebody wants to contest that and say, no, we don't fit the standard, we're unique for whatever reason, I think the board would have the ability to, you know, consider that possibly. You may want to set up some sort of a, you know, provide authority to the general manager to look at that and maybe on a case-by-case basis make some adjustments. You could go out and actually physically sample the waste that, that a particular customer is generating so that you knew what they were. And that sometimes occurs when you have a special industrial facility or something, somebody that may even be pre-treating the waste before they're contributing it. Some agencies actually go through and measure what is being contributed and develop a rate unique to that particular waste. So,
I'd just make a comment. I mean, I think that their waste category would be included in their intent to serve letter, so that they would, you know, and I think this is one of those intent to serve letters that would likely come back to the board for approval, and they would have an opportunity to identify whatever objections that they would have and probably be resolved through administrative process. The only thing I want to caution the board at this time, so that you sort of remember this, is that, you know, a restaurant can come in and say, we don't belong in this category because we're just doing breakfast, for example. But just because they're just doing breakfast does not mean that at some future time they can't do lunch and dinner. So, you know, we take a look at this in a broad concept of what they could do and not necessarily what they intend to do at the time of the intent to serve letter. So just sort of keep that in mind. It's not really germane to this discussion, but I want to make sure the board understands how that would work.
I just know that sometimes, for example, they'll have the capacity to pre-treat, but pre-treating can be expensive for some sorts of outputs. So they can pre-treat until you go away, and then they can save themselves a little money by not pre-treating. Mm-hmm. So at some point, you know, these things would have to be measured in some way, I would think. And the staff know more about this.
I'm not aware that you have any customers here in Napomo that, you know, would really be something that would need, you know, significant pre-treating.
Not now.
Yeah, I've had some clients that have had like food processing, you know, facilities where they really have very, very high BODs, and so they need to pre-treat. And there it's, you know, they need to bring it to some standard before they can discharge it. And there's whole separate, you know, rules that they need to follow to achieve that, and monitoring and so on. So, you know, there are those possibilities. This is the proposed rate schedules for the town division, flat rates at the top for single and multifamily. And you can see here for the multifamily how there's actually a reduction of about $5 bi-monthly for the multifamily dwellings, and that's because of the lower flows that are being contributed. And then the lower part of this slide has the service charge and the commodity rates for the non-residential, including the low, medium, and high strength commodity rate for the different non-residential customers. And those rates vary depending on the treatment requirements of low, medium, and high strength waste. Similar slide for Black Lake. There's only a single commercial or non-residential account out in Black Lake. So, you know, a lot of this analysis that goes on doesn't apply too much to Black Lake except for the one account. Most of it's within the single family and multifamily. I will comment that, you know, during the May 5th community meeting, when we started talking about the multifamily rate going down, you know, there were a number of people in attendance there that were going to benefit from that. And again, it was evidence of the improved equity that we're trying to achieve with the rate structure. And this slide again summarizes the proposed rates for the upcoming year relative to the neighboring communities for sewer service. This is the Black Lake is up here at the higher end, and that's in large part because of the higher level of treatment that's occurring out at Black Lake with that treatment facility and providing recycled water for irrigation purposes and so on, and that's the reason why that cost is so much higher. But again, not at the highest, certainly at the higher end of the range within the region, and then within the town division, we're still at the lower end of the range. And again, these are looking at just 4% increases annually. And I think that was it. Just in closing, I think this has been a good constructive process that we've been through. We've covered a lot of ground in the last 6 or 8 months as we've gone through these workshops, and I think we've come to a good result here. So I'm pleased with where we are with this, and be happy to answer any questions or further comments you may have on the recommendations.
Any questions, comments from the board? This time, then I'll open it up to public comment. Questions, comments to Mr. Reed?
I think you folks have done a good job of explaining to our residents in Black Lakes. We very much appreciate it.
Mr. President, as part of the public hearing process on this, I would request that you would call for any written protests to the proposed ordinance and rate structure.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. And so then at this time, I will call for any written protests to the water and sewer rate ordinance that's before us today.
Then any other protests? I mean, I think literally they could give an oral protest too. Prop 218 is a little confusing on that issue.
Seeing no written protests coming forward, are there any oral protests to the water and sewer rate ordinance before us today? Then seeing none, we will close it to protests and public comments, bring it back to the board.
Yes, Mr. President, if I might, if the board intends to move forward with adoption of the ordinance, first of all, I think we read it by title only at the first reading, so I don't think we need to go back through that process. But I would like to include a finding as follows, that pursuant to the provisions of Prop 218, we did deliver written notices of this hearing, and we make a finding that the protests do not meet the requirement of 50% of the notices mailed. In fact, as far as we can tell, we have received no protests, either oral or written, to the proposed rate ordinance, the new rates for water and sewer charges.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. Well, board, this is it. Mr. Trotter.
Yes, in my judgment, and you've heard this many, many times from me, the maintenance budget is grossly inadequate. And I would have made a larger fuss about this time, but the rates of increases are significant, so I backed off of it, but I still continue to be concerned about our level of maintenance in district facilities. It's not adequate, and it's certainly not Mr. McGurn's or the superintendent's fault, because they inherited this thing. But over time, NCSD has prided itself on lower rates, and it's an insidious, burdensome, worrisome thing. We're falling behind in maintenance. And I think the board should address this more seriously than they have in the past.
Thank you very much, Mr. Trotter. Any other comments, questions of staff on the sewer and rate ordinance? Then we need a motion and a second. Mr. Wynn?
I move that we adopt the ordinance as presented to us.
Can I ask the motion maker to include the findings that I announced?
And the findings that were given by staff, yes.
Second.
And a second by Mr. Eby. And that's also to read the ordinance in title only.
That was done.
I think we did that at the first reading, so I don't think we don't need to do it twice.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Mrs. Bagnuta, would you call for the vote, please?
Director Wynn.
Yes.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Mercer.
Yes.
Director Trotter.
Yes.
Director.
Yes. Thank you. One and all, this has been a long path, believe me.
One additional comment, if you'll allow me.
Please.
I think we all share Mr. Trotter's concern that the district have adequate maintenance, and there certainly is room for an increase in maintenance expenditures. It's just that I think most of us, including himself, thought that the steps we're taking this time are of such a nature that if we tried to add on additional increases, it simply would be unacceptable to our ratepayers. And so we're doing what we can at this stage.
Mm-hmm. I may make a comment.
Mrs.
I would
Worsing,
like to
please.
Thank Mr. Reed, and I thank our staff for us all agreeing to hire him. And I believe that he was very thorough and made it very clear, and we were able to work out the things that bothered us, and I think he did a great job, and I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And Mr. Trotter.
Another observation, in my judgment, it is not prudent to make projections as far as we've made them. The history has proven that projections often become inadequate and inaccurate, especially if I'm successful, the board's successful, in increasing the maintenance budget. Some of the projections may not come true. I think a three-year projection is sound, but certainly not a five. That's been my experience.
Okay. Well, I also, I have a few comments. I also want to thank Mr. Reed for just a superb job on this. We covered a lot more breadth than we ever had before in our rate studies, and it's very thorough. It opened up quite a few new avenues to look at. But with regards to this particular study, this is not, in my estimation, this is not a study that gets put on the shelf. This is a study that gets re-looked at on a yearly basis and tuned accordingly based on what's transpired during that year. And such, it's an ongoing rate study, not just one you do every 5 years or when something hits the fan. With that?
I passed out a copy of a notice that you sent all of the auditors this week. And it would have been read by Mr. Billinger, who represents Black Lake here. But he has a doctor's appointment this morning, asked me to distribute it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Down on the north of Black Lake.
Right. Okay, well, Mike, thank you.
Black Lake, on the other side, also Black Lake has been heard from. The town has been heard from.
That's true.
It's disturbing to me. I don't understand that.
Well, human nature is always a unfathomable.
Well, it's unusual. It is unusual.
I have a comment.
Mr. Eby?
And this was regarding the sort of along the lines of what Cliff said. We may be revisiting this sooner than we want to, and that would be probably because of the supplemental water. The cost for supplemental water, there are some very big assumptions in there. One is that we can get $2 million from the other water purveyors to make the supplemental water program work. If we can't, that money's got to come from somewhere else, and the somewhere else is probably the ratepayers. And number two is, I believe that $2 million we expected in the next fiscal year. So even if we do or don't get it, if we do or don't get it in the next fiscal year, the whole supplemental water charge unravels. So I'm going to keep harping on this until I'm really comfortable with the detailed, backed-up schedule and cost of supplemental water, the supplemental water program. I think we've got estimates as good as we can get right now, but I think we need to be aware that these numbers may change just because we don't have the exact, probably, well, I don't know how exact we need to be, but we're not close enough yet to the supplemental water delivery date, the final negotiations with the other water purveyors, or knowing really how much the supplemental water program is going to cost us. Just cautionary.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Eby. then we'll move on to item number E2, which is our budget for the 2005-2006 fiscal year. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheiler. This year's budget has gone through not quite the process we went through on the rate hearing, but a bit of a process, and just to briefly outline, the Finance Subcommittee met and reviewed a proposed budget on April 11th, and based on comments received at that meeting, staff revised the proposed budget and presented that in a study session to the complete board on May 13th. And recommendations from both meetings have been incorporated into the proposed budget that's in front of you. I've got just some budget overview numbers there. I want to bring your attention that as the attachments, we've listed the pie charts and resolutions, but actually the entire budget is attached. And the resolutions are within, and pie charts are within the proposed budget. And beginning on page 18, is our resolution of adoption, and page 19 is our appropriations limitation resolution, and then following on page 21 and 22 are the pie chart overviews of the budget. Just a few of the highlights of the budget, and I think that they begin, at least we are beginning to address some of these maintenance issues that have been highlighted here by director comments, in that the budget, well, first of all, reflects the rate increase that the board just adopted. So I'm glad we were able to get our rate increase adopted. And then we have in here a number of staffing resources, if you will. We have a new position that we'll be bringing on this year, and that'll be a conservation compliance specialist. And then we have, this budget includes funding for a student intern. We've now received two applications on that for the internship, so we'll be reviewing those applications and prepared to bring a student intern on as of July 1. Then we, for the summer that is, and then we've got, we have in the budget resources for contract meter reading. And while that would equate to about one person a year, the way you have to do meter reading is we usually go out in teams, so it pulls a significant resource away from our field staff, and I feel by going out to contract meter reading for a year or two, as we as the manager becomes more comfortable and familiar with the constraints of the staffing and where staffing needs to be added, that'll give us some time then to decide where we might bring permanent field staff on to address some of these resource issues. And finally, I wanted to touch on the appropriations limitations resolution. And this is a requirement as a part of the state constitution that we do concurrent with budget adoption. And again, that resolution is page 19. And basically, there's a calculation done that defines what our appropriations limitation is, and then we compare that to our appropriations specifically and ensure that we're underneath the limitation. So this is for the tax portion of our budget, and you can see the calculation here, and basically our appropriations limitation for the coming year is about $750,000. Our appropriations on the order of $90,000. And so we're well within, well under the limit. And some of that, of course, we have the ERAF shift in place right now, or what we'd see our appropriations might be more up around $300,000 and $310,000 typically, but still well under the appropriations limit. And with that, staff be happy to take any questions. Recommendation, of course, is to adopt the attached resolutions approving the 2005-2006 fiscal year budget. But again, staff is open to any questions or amendments to that.
Hey, Mr. Gwynn.
On page 19 that you referred to, Mr. LeBrun, I noticed that we're using the population change for the unincorporated area for the entire county. Is that a legal requirement, or is there some reason why we don't use the percentage change within the South County planning area, which is where we are?
Every year, the Department of Finance from the state of California issues the numbers that we're to use, and they issue it for all the cities in the county, and then they lump the unincorporated area into one lump number, and that's the one that they designated us to use.
Because the entire unincorporated area went up 1.78%, South County planning area went up 7.93%. Which is quite an anomaly. But if this is a formula that we're handed and we don't have any discretion, that's fine.
Yeah, we get to play the stucky in this scenario. Any other comments on the budget from the board?
Would it be appropriate if this district initiated a letter to the Department of Finance suggesting that they
It'd certainly be appropriate. At the same time, we're so far under the appropriations limit at this time.
Yeah.
It's not causing us any problem. And I even if I plugged in that 8% number, the difference to us again, we're hundreds of thousands of dollars under the appropriation limit now.
If we find ourselves approaching that limit closely or being restrained in some way, then we may want to think
and about we'd see that. We'd have some years where we'd start approaching, creeping forward.
You are creeping right
now.
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, but with the ERAF shift, I think our creep was somewhat reversed, if you will, because of our appropriations of tax dollars are significantly down for the next 2 years. As we come back to it, what that does is, by the formula, with our appropriations so low, it actually pushes that appropriations limit down incrementally for the next 2 years. And then when we come back on, I think we'll still be on the order of $100,000 to $200,000 below the appropriations limit. And then, of course, we will be making, be creeping up there.
Although it might not hurt to at least make them aware at this point in time that their formula, while we're not arguing it, but trying to apply it to an entire county, may not take into consideration all what the real growth in various community services district really is. It might not hurt to just knock on the door.
I can't deny that it would cause us any pain other than the staff time to knock on that door and
staff time to prepare the letter.
My assessment of the likelihood that it would. Again, we're going to be half-hearted. I mean, if they say, well, too bad, we're not going to charge back up there and say, because it's really of no consequence to the district at this time.
Mm. It's something they should be aware of and keep in their thoughts, too, that maybe they need to take another look at how they calculate. I'm just saying it wouldn't hurt. I don't know how much staff time it would take. Let's say an hour.
It wouldn't be significant. If the board so pleases, we'll write a letter to the Department of Finance to talk about this appropriations limit.
Not at this time.
Not unless you guys start feeling pinched.
Yeah. Okay, with that, my comment is, of course, you can see from the very first page that this is a very lean budget this year, with only a surplus of roughly $65,000. There's not a lot of gilt and gold and frills and whatnot. So with that, I'd like to open up this to public comment. Any public comment on our proposed
2005-2006 fiscal year budget. Seeing none, then we'll close it to public comment, bring it back to the board. And
we have two resolutions. For the board, I would suggest that you take the appropriation limit resolution first and then adopt the budget.
Okay. Which Thank you, Mr. Seitz.
Would be resolution 2005 appropriation limitation as the first motion.
Be number 940. Right.
That would be number 940. Thank you, Mrs. Bakhmuda. A motion from the board to adopt the resolution number 2005 appropriations limitation, current season 940.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. A second. Thank you, Mr. Trotter. Mrs. Bakhmuda, would you call for the vote?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Beebe?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes.
Director Barad?
Yes. And a motion to accept the resolution 2005-941, our budget for the coming fiscal year.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Eby. Do I have a second on that? Mr. Wynn, thank you. Mrs. Bakhmuda?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Peachy. Mrs. Worsing has a limited amount of time that she can spend with us this morning. Mm. And since she was a very much a proponent of doing a survey to our ratepayers on the possibilities of having our meetings videotaped by AGP, I would like to do that prior to item number E3, such that we could...
That'd be fine. I just dispersed Lisa. My copy of the agenda, at least, did not give the attachment that was the summary of the survey results again. And I don't know if the directors have that or not. Lisa's going to go run off some copies.
I took it from last meeting's.
Yeah, okay. That was not my intention.
Yeah, I have it from the last meeting.
Just to give a couple minutes of brief explanation. I was on the copy machine this morning doing the supplemental items memo, and I can attest to the fact that our copy machine is antiquated and tends to grab multiple sheets. And I would guess, at least I'll give Donna the benefit of the doubt on this, and often that we're grabbing multiple sheets, and that's why we're not catching things. Of course, we should, you know, there's other checks that could be in place to catch these things, and some improvements needed there. But on equipment wise, we do have in our next year's budget a substantial allocation for a new office. And we don't call them copy machines anymore, Lisa and I have been schooled. We went up to more office systems and reviewed the office machines that they have now. And the district will be considering either purchase or actually they're pretty pricey, and we're looking at a lease possibly, as this equipment evolves so quickly now. But basically what will look like a copier will now be a machine that scans in every document, makes electronic images of the documents. Can convert those into Word documents, can fax directly from that, mm-hmm. and also then, of course, produce copies like our current copy machine. So we're pretty excited about that, and hopefully...
you can network right to it.
It goes right onto the network, right. So as we run that image, then it'll come up on the staff screen, we can, you know, PDF, we'll have color, so we'll be able to scan in color now and post color documents of variety of documents that we post on our website. So hopefully there'll be improvement there. But now we have in front of us the summary of the customer survey results. And
so with your board's approval, I'd like to remove item E5 prior to E3.
Sure.
Yep. And Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilich. And jump over there to E5. The staff report I've given you is basically a repeat of that which I provided on May 25th. We went out to survey. We mailed surveys along with the billing to our customers here this spring. We received about 20% of our customers responded to the survey, and for that reason I normalized, if you will, or presented numbers on the survey. Sorry. Turn that master volume down just a bit. Yeah, so that was my test. But so our survey results I put as percent of respondents and then percent of all customers to help give a sense of what these responses mean, not just as to the percent of people that responded, but to our customer base as a whole. And based on these responses, it's staff's position that we're not seeing a strong opinion one way or the other on recording, doing video recording of our meetings or moving to night meetings. And staff's recommendation would be to maintain our procedures as they are. I think as far as the timing of the meetings, staff will support what the directors are of course interested in doing. And I think from my review of these results and my understanding of timing of the meetings, the most important folks on that regard are the directors themselves, and that it is you five that are giving your time twice a month, each and every month, and what fits in best to your schedule is again what staff would be is here to accommodate. In any event, I'll turn to the board then to take comments and direction.
Okay, comments, and we'll start with Mrs. Wersing.
With us not televising or having access to the meetings for the public to view, we are, I believe, we're the minority of the CSDs.
That's
and
correct.
As we know, Napomo does not respond to surveys like other communities. So I still believe that they all find budget monies to telecast their meetings. So I'm still confused as to why we don't want to try it on a trial basis to actually see. I don't particularly like to see myself on television, as a matter of fact, but a lot of people like to see what's going on, and they watch them. When I had my shop here in Napomo, there was a lot of people who said, well, I saw you on there. I was really interested in that. And so, so I'm really confused as to why we want to battle this so much. But we can't find the cell profits or something like that to be able to find out why the community is not more involved. It's because we don't get the word out properly to the people. I know that for a fact. And because I've been in the newspaper business for years and years, and there is not the access to what's happening here in Napomo, as much as we'd like to, some people object to me saying that, but it's true, in my opinion.
Mr. Crowder.
I think public attendance at NCSD meetings is an indication of their interest, and it just doesn't exist. The the fact that we had a very, very important hearing regarding rates, which affects everybody in this community, and had one person attend, that's the ultimate in apathy. And it's wrong. And I'm not convinced that the televising these would change any of that. I doubt whether they would be followed. I respect Mrs. Wershing's wish to have the community better informed, but I don't think they care. They don't seem to respond.
Mr. Wynn?
I attended these meetings when they were held in the evening, and we've been over this so many times, I don't know that we need to go over again. I think there's two things that definitely can be said in support of Mrs. Wearsing, and that is, one, we're beginning to see that fewer people get their news from reading and more other people get their news from television, and that's in all walks of life. I'm not happy with that, but I think that's happening anyway. Here, I don't know that the number of cable customers is going up. At least in the old town, it looks to me as though the cable number of cable customers is holding steady or dropping because of DirecTV. It's being very successful in marketing here, and they do not have access to Channel 21.
Right.
So that if you have DirecTV, you couldn't watch what we have anyway.
God bless you, Mr. Spartan.
As far as I know, we have 17 CSDs in this county, and of them, only three, I think, go public. Oceano, Los Osos, and...
Cambria.
And I watch them. I mean, that's kind of sick, but I do. I have to tell you that I find Oceano reasonably interesting, although it goes on and on and on. Cambria is so poorly filmed that it's difficult actually to watch. And Los Osos, I think, runs pretty much within the community. I don't see them much here. But then I don't stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning either, because they have evening meetings that go long.
Well into the next day.
So because of what I've seen, both with not any much interest in the evening meetings and knowing that if we do get something contentious, we have living proof in this county that they will go till 1, 2, or 3 o'clock in the morning easily. I would rather stay in the daytime.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Mr. Eby?
Okay. Four comments here. One is the number of people that responded to this. It was disappointing, but then our elections are disappointing too. So I would give, if the people don't respond, I think they lose their choice in this, and I would defer to the people who do respond and take seriously their opinions. In the first part, the people who had, would they look at cable, yes or no? The slightly more no than yes. Myself, the more I think about it, I wouldn't watch it on cable because it's usually at 2 in the morning for these outlying rural areas. And so you've got to wait around until they come to you, essentially. As far as the internet access, I thought that was a great approach because you can look at it anytime you want, at your own speed and fast forward and everything. And I was disappointed that hardly anybody was, a very low percentage was interested in that. That would be my preference, but if people don't want it, they shouldn't have to pay for it. And then finally, the other one was the night meetings. This is the only one that I don't really care one way or the other whether I attend day or night, but I have had people comment to me that they want night meetings, more people than anything else want night meetings, and that appears to be the same thing here. You had 5 to 1 of the respondents wanted night meetings instead of day meetings. And then the ones that would not attend, if you subtract those out, 263 minus 129, that implies that 134 people would attend. I don't know if they would or not, but at least they implied that they would. So we'd have to get more chairs, but that wouldn't be a bad thing.
We've got extra chairs in the back.
As far as whether people would really, really do that, I think we could determine that on a trial basis. Suppose we put, suppose we had, say, 3 months, July, August, and September, as night meetings on a trial basis, and if not enough people show up, go back to whatever people prefer. But I'm going to make a motion that we do a trial period on for 3 months on night meetings, just because people have asked me for it, number one, and number two, the poll here shows that more people want night meetings than day meetings. So I won't make the motion until you're through commenting, but I will make it.
Mr. Trotter.
A statistician will tell you that this is not a meaningful survey because it's, the response isn't adequate. It doesn't give you a proper cross-section once more.
I'll grant that it's not a scientifically significant, but as far as voters go, you can say the same thing about the election. You can say if enough people don't show up for the election, it's not significant, so it's no vote. But that's not the way we do it. And as far as I'm concerned, the people that chose to respond responded, and I'm willing to give them a try. And if it gets voted down, my feelings won't be hurt, but at least I'll say I did it.
I'd like to have some help with the motion I'd like to offer some help to the motion when the motion maker is ready.
I guess it doesn't really, I really have no heartburn whether it's morning or evening. The people who are regularly here for these meetings are usually our applicants, people with projects in process, or persons with projects that are in the conceptual stage. And they usually bring with them or have their representative here. And of course, that represents dollars. It's a cost for them. So personally, I prefer morning meetings. I really don't like the distraction or the intrusion of having all this equipment staring at you and people jostling back and forth to operate it. I find that hard to concentrate. And some people they love to be on stage, so they tend to really ham it up or go for it, as the terminology would be when they're in front of the microphone. Personally, I'd be willing to try a trial period of evening meetings, but I'm not enthused about having it videotaped. Mr. Trotter, thank
One
you.
One thing the board has not done here properly, in my judgment, they haven't recognized the plight of the staff concerning night meetings. It's a hardship on the staff. And admittedly, the staff is here to serve. They serve very well. But it would be a hardship on the staff.
Well, I think part of any decision outside of we just put this aside for right now would have to take into consideration staff's availabilities and whatnot. And Mrs. Worsen.
I'd like to make one comment that we were elected to serve the people, and however best we can serve the people is what should come first. I mean, I know that evening, I'm the kind of person that likes to stay home in the evening, but I do work and I'm finding it more and more difficult with when there's illnesses in our family or anything that we, and then I just need to stress the point that we do not have communication with the public as like we should. There's something peculiar about this community in that respect. So that's, you know, Black Lake's a very groupy, they're well communicating with each other. But this is, you can take any community and they get the word, they talk with each other, they have publications, but there's something, people don't shop in Napomo properly. There's lack of communication. So if that's not important, then you know, I'm only one person. But when I worked, like I said, people used to come and talk to me about the concerns and everything, and I had a lot of communication with the people, and I think that they would respond if we could just get the word that they're able to come and participate. So it's very frustrating, and I can understand everybody's views, you know, because it's difficult for evening, but then how we should at least maybe give it a try.
Mr. Wade.
I'm not going to support Mr. Eby's vote, although I'm sympathetic to his motives, but we have done this.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know what the results were.
And they weren't any better than they are right now.
The people that come here, that will come to meetings, generally are people who are no longer working all day and taking care of their kids all evening. And those people, retirees, generally don't go out at night. Many of them don't drive at night. We might, if we tried it in the summer when it's really bright, maybe some would, but this is not a theory. This is something we've done here in this district.
I've not attended one.
And it was not well attended. And in addition to which, there's our staff, there's county staff, there's advisory groups, there's all sorts of people. Plus the potential for going until midnight every other week. I don't see any upside to it. I see nothing but negatives. So I'm not going to support it.
If we go, no, we won't go to midnight.
Don't tell me you won't. The law may say you have to. They're doing malsosis.
Okay, I'm ready to make a motion, but I want to hear what the suggestions are.
Yeah,
Mr. Sykes, please.
You know, our bylaws cover our meeting times and dates, and there's a little phrase in the Brown Act by bylaw or otherwise. So what I would suggest that if the motion maker is going to make it is to bring back a resolution. We'd probably put it on the consent calendar, if that's depending on how the vote goes here, or not put it on the consent calendar, depending on how the vote goes. But what staff would like is, you know, some really concrete direction that this would be a trial. If this is going to move forward, what the motion maker's intent is. And since we'd bring it back at the next board meeting, we'd suggest that you start it in July, whatever, because we have one more meeting in June and we could take the final action. And then for how many months, and then what would be the starting time for the meeting, because we need to include that in our bylaw amendment too.
We also might want to talk about, and maybe this is getting ahead of it, but what would constitute a successful trial? Our daytime meetings sometimes have very low attendance. I guess that would be at the direction of the board. So no need to get ahead of that. We'll all be here through any trial that we have, and we can all
address. I just had one more comment before you want to craft a motion. Is we are in the summertime also, and people are on vacation. There's a lot of sports activities in the evenings for families with kids and whatnot, so on and so forth. So having a trial period in the summer, I think we're walking up to the plate with two strikes on us, and the ball's already left the pitcher's hand on the way to the catcher. I don't think that's a good time to have a trial if the board decides that. So with that, Mr. Eby.
Okay. I'd like to move that the staff draft a resolution that we consider at the next meeting for a trial period during the months of July and August of evening meetings. At the end of that period, we'll evaluate whether we think the night meetings are successful in getting more public input and vote on whether we want to continue it. The starting times of that meeting should be at the staff's discretion. You come up with what you think is the best time to start, and then we'll let it finish when it finishes, but that's my motion.
Is there a second on that motion?
No.
Okay. Mr. Trotter, you had a comment?
I make a suggestion within the resolution that the staff identify the character of the attendees here, you know, why they're here during the trial period, why they're here, and how many and each variety and so forth.
Okay, I'll add that. I'll add that to the motion. The staff does an informal survey of the makeup of the audience.
Okay, motion by Mr. Eby. Is there a second to that motion?
I would like to second that to have a trial basis.
Okay, and a second by Mrs. Worsing. I will now open it to public comment. Any comment? Humorous or otherwise, we're certainly willing to listen regarding this motion. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board then. And Mrs. Bog,
That's only just for the night meeting. I didn't say anything about the cable and the recording. Mm. That wasn't part of it.
Okay, Mrs. Bognuda, would you please?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
No.
Director Trotter?
No.
Director Perlman?
No.
I'm crushed.
Well, I don't have time in the evenings.
Well, I would like to ask Mr. Seitz a question, please. With regards to my attendance, with my life in a turmoil, and I'm still dedicated to the community, how does that work if I'm no longer able to attend daylight meetings? Isn't there some kind of thing in the bylaws, I recall, or not?
Yeah, well, I think I don't have the bylaws right in front, but there is a provision that, you know, that the directors will make an effort to attend. I think, you know, that if a director can't attend a meeting and it's a daylight day meeting, I think that needs to be brought to the attention of the board for the board's consideration and call for a new vote. I do think that changes the weight of the board's consideration. I mean, I think the board would want, this is just my impression, the board would want to have a full board, and its meetings would be a number one priority for the board's, for a policy of the board. You certainly wouldn't want to set meetings where it would be exclusionary to board members.
Well, and I'm on the other side of the spectrum. I teach at night at Cal Poly, but we were elected at a time when we met in the daytime.
Right, but there was always the understanding that we could, because of the way I understood it when I ran for office, talking with some of the board members at that time, that we could have, if it interfered with my... that it could be.
Yeah, and you know, due to in our bylaws, section 2, paragraph 2.1, and that allows us to, depending on conflicts and whatnot, we can move the time of the meeting. So we can actually do that without a resolution or anything. That just takes a board action.
Right. So, I mean, I think that if board members cannot attend meetings, I think it's incumbent on the board to try and find a time and a date where the full board can attend. Now, that may be impossible to achieve, depending on schedules, but I do think that the board needs to consider that as a policy issue.
Judy, excuse me. This is a personal matter, and I respect that.
anybody at this time to fill me in for 2 hours or 3 hours twice a month. But and I've always attended with hiring people to come, but you know, this is, it's maybe not economically.
It's not economically feasible on a long-term
right.
basis.
I mean, like, you know, with our business is very complicated. You just can't hire somebody to come in and operate it with 2 or 3 hours. But anyway, it's something that I always thought that we could accomplish when I was elected. And of course, Mr. Wynn, you didn't work evenings at that time when we were first elected.
Actually, I did, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah, which was okay, because that was Tuesdays and Thursdays. Here we are Wednesdays, you're at Cal Poly Wednesday.
But now I'm doing 4 days a week.
Yeah. So that pretty much precludes everything but Friday for you.
Friday's worked for me fine.
I was saying that with a little bit of humor. Hey, with that said, I'd like to take a little break here for 10 minutes. I have 10:30 and reconvene at 10:40. That way, if you feel you want to leave, call the meeting back to order. Item number E3 is our Black Lake Street lighting. For 2005-2006, resolution to establish the rates. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. As you know, the district provides Black Lake Street lighting services, and we do this actually through contract with PG&E. We sign up for a rate that PG&E offers that includes then the maintenance of the light standards and the light bulbs themselves. We've provided basic history of the rates for street lighting out at Black Lake, a basic review of our budget items for street lighting out at Black Lake. We've public notice this public hearing in the Telegram Tribune, both on May 25th and June 1st of this year. And with no further ado, this is the time for our public hearing to confirm the report of collections and charges to be assigned to the 2005-2006 tax roll. And following that public hearing, consideration of public comments, staff recommends the board approve resolution 2005 942 establishing Black Lake Street lighting charges.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. LeBrun.
What goes into the charges other than the energy that's electric?
On the front page of the staff report, plus we have insurance and a public notice fee every year, and that's it.
Yeah, okay. So.
Well, then again, our contract with PG&E is electricity, and then there's the maintenance factor. It's built in.
I understand.
Okay.
So this is a foregone conclusion. There's no latitude here, is there?
No.
Okay.
If you want to raise it, we'd have to go to a Prop 218 election.
I make a motion that we accept them.
I'd like to get any other comments from the board. I have one thought, but I'll wait. I'm going to open it up to public comment now for the Black Lake Street lighting charges. Seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board. I have a question. If one of the standards was knocked down by somebody hitting it,
one of the old folks.
Who would pay for that? Is that PG&E or would that be us?
That would be PG&E on the lighting where we pay the rate that includes the pole and the head maintenance.
Okay, so they would replace it without
a cost to us.
That's
without an added cost to us. Okay.
I imagine they would go after the person who did it.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because a light standard could cost $50,000. I don't know why, but after going through with Old Town Napomo Association. So, bring it back to the board for any subsequent comments.
Was there
need a motion then to accept a resolution?
I make that motion.
Second.
Okay, Mrs. Bognuda, call for the vote, please.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
President Brown?
Yes. Thank you, one and all. Next is the our landscape maintenance district number one, the assessment of that. This is another resolution. Did we need to read that in title only?
No. That only applies to ordinances and not resolutions.
Okay. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. An item similar in nature, a public hearing and ordering levying the collection assessment of taxes for landscape maintenance district number one, and this affects a small portion of our customers. Basically, what you have in your staff report here is the basic calculation that's made to look at the cap on what our annual assessment can be. And so then that's based on our, we do have a CPI clause, if you will, and we're allowed to increase by the amount of the consumer price index, and that is what staff's suggesting. And let me see, do we have those budget numbers? We did it at our last board meeting, discuss the overall budget numbers. And we see that our annual assessment is slightly below what our budgeted cost per parcel is. But staff feels that, the only way we could go above our maximum assessment, which again is the 2004-2005 maximum plus the CPI, would be to go to a rate hearing. And in this case, we feel that our numbers are tight, but that we will be able to come in under our approximately at budget. So again, it is staff's recommendation, following the public hearing and receiving a public comment, that the board approve resolution
943,
assigning the assessment of taxes to landscape maintenance district number one customers.
Okay, any comments, questions of staff from the board? Seeing none, we'll open. Thank you, Mr.
I can do it after public comment.
Okay, we'd like to open this now to public comment for landscape district number one for the Edwards development across from Dana School, roughly. Seeing no public comment, bring it back to the board. Mr. Wynn.
I just have a question for staff. How complicated would it be for us to amend our references to these to consistently say street landscape maintenance district? By saying landscape maintenance, we continue to confuse people, and they think that we can take over parcels, parks, whatever, and we're very, very limited to just right along the roadway.
Right. We, as the board may recall, we actually pursued special legislation in order to, and is street landscaping. I just think that we can conform the resolution to that with, as part of the motion, directing staff to conform the resolution to street landscaping.
Okay. Because I know our legislation didn't allow us to go beyond that.
Exactly.
That's a good comment. We'll have no problem with that.
Very good one. Any other comments from the board?
Motion.
motion then?
I move we approve resolution 2005-943 with the change of wording to add street to landscape maintenance district.
We have a second on that. Mr. Wynn, Mrs. Bognuda.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Tubbs?
Yes.
Yes.
I get questions ever so often from the old town. How come we don't take over these two parcels here?
Right.
I keep telling them we don't have the power to do that.
Okay. Moving on to, and Mrs. Bognuda will now be departing from our company, which means we are now back to an all male.
Ellis has left the building.
Don't let her.
You're leaving for out of town. Thank you very much, Mrs.
What did you say to her?
I said, get out of here.
Item number E6 here. Put the glasses on. Conservation Subcommittee. At this juncture, I think the board is aware, and some members more than others, that it has been slow in meeting its goals. I talked to Mrs. Worsing, who is the chair, and she was very thankful that we would reappoint the members of the Conservation Subcommittee. And with that said, I have talked to Mr. Wynn and requested that he chair the Conservation Subcommittee. Okay. And then I'm going to appoint myself to work with Mr. Wynn in that regard.
Excellent.
So our new Conservation Subcommittee will consist of Mr. Wynn is chair and myself is also.
Not alternate.
No, I mean, I'm going to be a...
Oh, yeah, member.
Member also. Not alternate, no.
And...
So with that said, Mr. Wynn.
Do you have time this next week to meet?
We could meet the... 14th.
Late? That's when the Board of Supervisors are meeting.
Oh, that's
the
right.
Flood control zone.
How about the 13th in the afternoon sometime? Mid-afternoon.
That's good. I have no meetings before 5:30.
Okay. Want to say 2-ish or something like
two's
that?
2 is good.
Would you want to meet here then, Mike?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, actually, that's my meeting with you at 3 to go over the coming agenda. So that would work out very, very well.
Will it?
Yeah. We can have an hour, and then I can move right into a 3 o'clock.
Okay, good.
How's that, Mr. LeBrun?
You're on the 13th?
Yeah.
I think that's fine. We have a 2 p.m. scheduled bid opening. If there are any to be opened, it'll be here in the... We'll do that. That's on the Blacklake line. That's all I have on my schedule.
Okay.
So I would be, assuming we have bids, I would be attending bid opening.
Okay. I would assume that you would also be attending bid opening. Okay. Great. Moving on to item number F is our manager's report. Do we need to do anything further with the reappointment, Mr. Seitz? Okay, then it's a done deal. Okay. Mr. LeBrun, manager's report.
Thank you, President Rahilly. A number of items to report on. We have the written report in front of you, and I can bring your attention to some highlights. Given a basic summary of our service request there. I met with county staff regarding a planning standard for area-wide planning standard for supplemental water. That was just John Hand and myself, and it's evident that the county had quite a bit more work and research to do, and I think Pat Beck had been out on vacation for some time, so maybe there's some lack of momentum there. I haven't, it has not been confirmed as of yet, but I understand, Tuesday, June 14th is the next proposed meeting where they'll be looking to bring together all the interested parties. And when county staff called me to put those tentative dates on my calendar and both President Verheilig and Vice President Eby's, I stressed that the district would be looking to see the other purveyors at the table to make sure that that all those on the purveyor side were in agreement.
Is that going to be an agendized meeting, or are we just going to all come in and start swinging?
I believe they'll have a list of, I think if nothing else, I'll be going over the list of the directives that they feel that they've received from the Board of Supervisors and what progress, if any, they've made there. And I know that the county staff is meeting internally and working on some items. They've mentioned that to me, and actually said you could come up to this meeting if you want, but I think we've really got some work to do internally. And I said that's great. We'll be anxious to hear that you have an area-wide planning standard in place, and because I can tell you we will have a supplemental water pipeline project that would take anybody joining on. We welcome partners or other participants there. On our wastewater side, the Black Lake Lagoon 1, we had a bid opening scheduled for May 31st, and we received no bids. In the meantime, I have not had a chance to talk with Jim Gehring, Gehring Taylor Associates, on this as to what options we might consider if we continue to get no bids on that. Mr. Gehring's been out. His father passed recently, and he took some time away from the office, and he haven't been able to coordinate since then, but I have a call into him and expect to hear back from Jim on that. Hermick Well, I don't have an update on that. I'd look to see if there's members of the public here. We forwarded that off for a second opinion there, and prior to forwarding it off, our geologist consultant, Mr. Cleet, did quite a review of the downhole geophysics log in order to send that off for a second opinion. I don't think that I missed it or other directors. We had some questions about this at our last meeting. In my opinion, much of that review could have been done and should have been done on those geophysical logs before casing that well. It's to the general manager. I asked in early meetings, and Mr. Cleith and I have reviewed this, that I did ask for this type of review and didn't get the kind of response. But as a young general manager in the middle of a project and hoping to get that thing done, and boy, I was hoping, we're all optimistic, hoping for a gusher. I let that roll by, and I shouldn't have. And I think I'll be learning a number of lessons, as I have in the last 7 months. But I'll learn, and I won't repeat mistakes. But I just feel like obviously, if I had this to do over again, I would be more adamant about it, and not allow the fall weather to be pushing my schedule or my recommendations. And it's unfortunate in the event as to where we're at. I think Mr. Cleese's recommendation following that downhole geophysical review and work he's done is pretty clear that there's no need to spend any more time or energy.
Does he recognize the fact that a mistake was made?
Yes.
He recognizes that. Did he say it in so many words?
I'm not comfortable. I've had conversations with Mr. Cleet and as to where there were mistakes made, and we've reviewed that, and I told him though that I'm I'm taking the responsibility with this board, and I'm not looking to assign that.
It's unfair for you to take all the heat here, Mike. It really is.
As is sometimes is the case in life. I agree. I feel, though, that in hindsight, again, I knew the better. I mean, I'd asked less. We do more here, and honestly, it was to me to drive that home. And I assumed a consulting relationship there that I stepped into and assumed. And in any event,
you hired him as an expert.
I did not hire him. Well, I assumed that role. That's
he was hired as an expert.
That's correct.
And he let the district down, is what it amounts to, in that regard.
You know, we've had conversations about this, and I applaud your approach. Because any other approach becomes less productive. I mean, if we decided to go after him, and he's a friend of mine, but he costs us $250,000 with this in round numbers, and I'm not thrilled about that. But there's no place to go that really serves any great purpose, except the next time we start looking for an expert, we'll have this little bit of history in our minds, and frankly, that's what we're going to carry out of this. Yeah. I think you assumed something in midstream. I'm not trying to make excuses for you. I mean, everybody's here to look out for each other. And we all, you know, we could have said something. So I just think we need to move on. I think that's what you're doing, and I appreciate it.
And, well, speaking for myself, too, I'm not well-versed on well drilling and what should happen when and so on and so forth. So, you know, I was rather ignorant. Let's put it that way.
I have drilled or supervised the drilling many, many wells over time. And I leaned on the consultant to an immense degree. And in my judgment, he really let the district down here. Mm. And Mike, it's unfair for Mike to take all the heat.
Sometimes it just works like that.
But this isn't an action item, so I just suggest that we move on to the next.
Right.
Then to move on down to urban water management plan, I actually have an update to this note here. We did have a kickoff meeting with Ms. Meredith Clement and Ms. Monica, I won't be able to get her last name, but both with SAIC and Ms. Clement will be the project lead on this, on the preparation of our urban water management plan update. I feel it was a productive meeting. Mm. We had, coming out of that meeting, scheduled the presentation for July 13th, and it's actually worked out, I think, for the better all around. We'll be moving that presentation to our our next meeting. We'll have SAIC here, and I think earlier in the process, the better. Mm-hmm. They'll be giving an overview of the Urban Water Management Plan Act and the update process, and looking for board inputs and comments on that. So. I'm excited to have SAIC on board on this. I think they'll do a fine job for us. I did convey to them in that meeting that an update of our build-out water resources needs, both within our current services area and our sphere of influence, are a top priority, and that I would like to see them review those numbers as early in the process as possible to give those a priority. Of course, we'll be taking those numbers and feeding those into the work that Doug Wood is doing on the CEQA for our pipeline project. So, boy, timing is critical here. So,
now, after an EIR, both by county and LAFCO, do we still have to call those Class 1 impacts?
Yes. And that's, let's go to the CEQA pipeline and on that, on our Santa Maria pipeline, I actually have, there's been a draft project description circulated to myself and Ernie Ray at Cannon Engineering, who continues to support our project, and to a staff council. I have some comments back on that. I'm trying to move. The project description in draft still calls out for a 3,000 acre foot pipeline. I sent correspondence yesterday to Doug Wood, and we had conversation actually talking about what it would take in order to substantiate a larger project. And avoid the real growth-inducing type of arguments. Now, on growth inducement, he said, and I've looked at what he cited to me in the CEQA Act, and that any removal of a constraint to growth, and that's what we're talking about here. It's not growth-inducing because it is, in fact, the general plan that dictates what the growth will be, but it is a constraint to development. If there's no water, then no matter what the general plan says, we're not going to grow. But if we remove that constraint, we have to address that. And he feels it's prudent to address it straight up. This is, you know, as a class one, here's what the basis for it is, and here's what the work. So in order to go, our project description talks about 3,000 acre feet, and of course that ties right back to our adjudication work and the groundwater lawsuit. But what I've also cited then is I've gone into the EIR for the sphere of influence update, and specifically within that EIR, a number of alternatives are worked out in Chapter 7 of the EIR. And I've had this conversation with David Church over at LAFCO, who actually did those alternatives. And alternative 2, David feels is most realistic, and I feel is at least most conservative from a water resources standpoint. Alternative 2 recognizes specific plan amendments that are called out in the general plan for areas within our sphere, and also recognizes that there may be some other land conversions by general plan amendment, and then calls out for a total of on the order of 2,300 acre feet of additional water needed for that sphere of influence.
Would you say that again, the number?
I believe it's on the order of 2,300 acre feet.
Over and above our 3,000?
Yes. So I've added that to the project. Now, this is something I was able to craft this email off to Doug Wood yesterday and have not heard back from him. But I expect that, that's justification enough where we can point there to that EIR, again, a certified document. And then finally, I referred to the county's work and their county water resources, what they call their water resources master plan, and the water... WPA, help me, Mike. Water, what is it? Planning area 6. Water planning area 6 update to that master plan was done in 2002, I believe, was the date I saw it. I thought it was more recent, but nonetheless, in 2002. And in that document, they estimate urban water resources demand growth, and they had a number in there, and I want to say it was on the order of 3,300 acre feet. But that included our area and sphere of influence, of course, and then the areas that are outside the district's purview. So I took their 3,300, I subtracted off our 2,300, and I said, well, there's another 1,000 acre feet that, while it's not within the district's purview, it's on the Mesa, and we're looking for a planning area standard, and then we'd look to either offset our pumping by that or deliver that water. So what I asked Mr. Wood was, there you have it then, 6,300 acre feet going, and to see if he feels that there's enough justification. Finally, Mr. Wood and I have spoken, and I have spoke with Ernie Ray, again our Canon consultant, about sizing the section of pipe that crosses the river to the maximum size that will support our minimum delivery, okay? And so we've got a minimum delivery rate, and then you, of course, we can't put a 48-inch pipe across there and run, 500 gallons a minute through it effectively. So again, I'm asking for the maximum size of pipe that we can do across the river based on a delivery minimum, and I've used a 2,300 for that number, 2,300 acre feet a year as a delivery minimum. And what we'll do there, and what I've talked to Mr. Wood about, is that our CEQA then will recognize that potentially that section of pipe could carry up to, who knows what its maximum flow, it could be 10,000 acre feet of water, and I'll use that number as an example. But the rest of the pipe, the rest of the plumbing, if you will, to that connection, would be held capacity-wise, based on the pumps and the storage and the delivery capacity of the rest of the system, would be held at our maximum that we justify, be it 6,300 acre-feet or whatever we feel, again, is justifiable and defendable. And then we would recognize that right in our CEQA document and say that any increase in capacity, the reason we're doing the large piping size is for unforeseen projects. We want to cross the river once. We're not a planning agency. We can't control what ultimately would happen out here. But that any increase in the project above our justified maximum would constitute another project and would require CEQA review at that time. Mm-hmm. So that's our tack we're taking. And that's
like
evolving.
I agree with your approach. I don't know if your numbers are right, whether it's 10,000, 6,300 or what, but
right.
I do agree that you do design it to a choke point. And that choke, you have excess capacity in some areas, but a choke point elsewhere,
right.
which ultimately mm-hmm. limits it. And then if you need to come back to that, you do your EIR or your CEQA work on a choke point.
Right, for that project.
The other thing, too, is even though, you know, we'll have a choke point on our side, nothing's to say that Santa Maria won't be in the same situation on their side if it gets above a certain amount of delivery per year.
Although they are currently accepting money from the Homeowners Association to upsize their pipes on their side, which has nothing to do with us directly. They're making sure they don't have choke point.
Okay, well, they have three connections on their side. What, I think the largest one was an 18-inch pipe or 14-inch pipe?
The connection points actually come off of 10 and 12-inch pipe, okay. But there are 18-inch pipes. There's the Santa Maria system, if you will, where ours is east-west, theirs is north-south, mm-hmm. and their major reservoir fields are to the south of town. And so what they're doing through capital improvement projects in the coming years is they'll be increasing their transmission main sizes going north-south so that they can deliver the water as the demand comes on. And they see it as a process that will come over the next number of years as these demands come on. So they see the initial demand in perhaps 2 years, and they'll be ready for that. And then they see, like Home Builders Association, they're talking about specific projects that are going to be 5 years and decade out. And the city of Santa Maria, they'll continue to, well, they're going to make sure they can sell that water.
Yeah, I thought there was one that dead-ended that was indicated on the cannons.
As an 18-inch?
Yeah, that was a 14 or 18-inch or something. It was a little closer to the bridge, or it was in the middle. Or,
yeah.
Anyway, it was somewhere, but yeah, so.
I'm certain as this demands increase and the city of Santa Maria will, this is money to them, of course. They'll be making sure their system can deliver. On the cannon, and I'll take that as a segue into one of my supplemental material memos here, and that is I've summarized, and this is toward the end of the packet, a summary of task orders to date. And I just want to go over those briefly with the board and answering any questions, of course. Again, this memo is in that package, and it's one right in front of the legal documents coming from Ships and Sites. And as it states, I've issued 13 task orders to date. I don't know if it's a majority, but a number of those are plan check task orders. So that's our process now is when I receive development plans in for plan check, those had been done in-house, and I think, in any event, they had in the past been done in-house. We're moving those out now to Boyle and Wallace are both working on plan checks for us. As you'll see, there's no value on those, a dollar value of the task order. The reason why is that's completely a pass-through cost where all costs that the consultant and thereby the district incurs by plan check is passed on to the developer through our plan check inspection agreement. And again, the plan checks, it depends on what kind of condition the plans are in, as to how long it'll take and how many iterations back and forth, and
And this is already working very nicely, in my opinion. We'll continue to revise. Specifically, I wanted to point out with Cannon Associates, a number of task orders. These are all fairly high dollar value task orders. This is continued support of this pipeline project. We've got the two major task orders, air task orders 1 and 4. Those are to provide additional CEQA support. Doug Wood is looking for some specific exhibits and some more work on where facilities on our side of the river may or may not be. That's task order 1. And then on task order 4, Cannon is working on coming up with a cost estimate schedule and including a funding schedule, which is and planning support for the pipeline project. And that's due, at least in the first iteration, by June 17th. I believe that's correct. And so that we can better refine our estimates, but again, then those will be continually revised as we move through this process and alternatives are selected or constraints are identified. I think in response to the direction I've received from the directors is let's do everything we can prudent to move this project forward, and that's along my efforts to do that. Additionally, I've got two smaller task orders with Cannon. One is for grant research, where I've asked them to, within their planning staff, to do a survey for grants that might be fruitful for us to apply to for this project specifically. So that's to review what's out there in the grant world and provide a report and recommendation back to me as to what grants that they see is being very viable for this project. And along those lines, of course, the county, through the Water Resources Advisory Committee, is doing an integrated regional water management grant under Prop 50 right now. And I have pulled Cannon in to help support that grant application as I was falling a bit behind the curve with county staff and in any event, that's what that task order is about. On this list also, with Boyle Engineering, there are two task orders that are not plan check specific. The first task order I issued, and this was the TO1 to Boyle, is to update our standards and specs document. It's a document that this board basically adopted or pirated or pulled to a great degree from the county some years ago, and has just done literally, you know, physical cut and paste and handwritten edits, and it's not a document that's effective for us. This is standards and specs document should be the document that a developer can go to and look at and know what the district expects, and then our foreman upon inspection and say, plan spec document, you know, standards and specs, as you this is not, you know, so it's our standard. So anyway, we're updating that. I have a draft now back from Boyle with their recommendations, and we sat down and had a meeting on those recommendations, the field supervisor and myself with the Boyle engineers. Anyway, I'm excited to get that final product, and I think it'll be a big improvement. The last task order then is, this is just recently issued, and this is on our Black Lake booster station. This field supervisor identified we've got a 4 booster pump system over there at Black Lake. Again, Black Lake's a separate water system, and what happens at Black Lake is pumps operate on level of a reservoir tank that's sitting at ground level. And then in order to put the system pressure, we have booster pumps that operate on system pressure switches that come on and provide the pressure to the system. They feed off the reservoir tank and pressurize the system supply that way. We've got one pump in there that's underrated compared to the other 3, and when the system's at full demand, the 4th pump is simply running at a deadhead, overheating and not providing any aid to the system. And in addition, the system, of course, is 30 years or they're approximately in age, at least some components. And the system's having a heck of a time keeping up with demands of the Black Lake community in the morning. So we've called Boyle in to give us a review. It's really just a cursory review and a letter report of recommendations, and then we'll be moving down a path there to make some upgrades to the Black Lake booster system.
You have three houses under construction in the new phase right now.
Yes.
So,
right. We've got a bit more demand coming on Black Lake. I think it's 19 homes total in that Bellagio phase, and some open space irrigation. So we can expect those demands to go up. And I'll keep moving forward. And
excuse me.
Yes.
Regarding your memo in reference to Black Lake.
That's the one I wanted to move into.
Yeah, this.
Low pressure Black Lake Division.
Low pressure memo. You can file this under trivia, but the first sentence is a typo. It should be a D on the end of experience.
Thank you.
Okay.
Second comment.
Black Lake well number 3 is failing.
Yes.
And if you read this in the strictest way it's written, it's failing a new pump. Why would you put a new pump on a failing well?
Understood.
Pardon me?
I said I understood your strictest interpretation. And what I mean to say is Black Lake well pump number 3 is failing.
There you go.
Let me just review this overall. And the Black Lake water system is doing everything it can to keep up. And again, we've got a pump that's failing. That pump is scheduled for replacement today. With a pump replacement, improve efficiency, but we can't improve capacity because that is, of course, dictated by the well casing. Our pumping capacity out at Black Lake is about 750 gallons per minute, and that's with wells 3 and 4 online. And then we're seeing some incredible peak demands. This year was a bit dampened because of the rain. I've given these graphs, I'm calling them drafts. These are something that Dan provided me, our field supervisor provided me out of our test telemetry system, the system that's been in place as an example of what our new telemetry system will provide. So this is over at the shop, and he produced these graphs, and I wasn't able to go in and rework them. But what they show is a series of 3 days, I believe, 4 days. We've got four sets of peaks there. 4 days in 2004 and 2005, at the end of April. And what you can see, especially in 2004 when we had less rain in April, is peak demands in the morning as high as 1,000 gallons per minute. And what we'll be doing is with this type of information, with the feedback I get from Boyle, I'll be scheduling a meeting with the Black Lake irrigation representative and talking about what we can do, what the district would like to see in order to spread some of these peaks out, soften these peaks. We could do more irrigation maybe in the late evening hours prior to midnight. And I know in talking with Director Trotter that in the past, the irrigation folks out there have always felt that their direction was to irrigate only after midnight in those wee hours in the morning. And I think that's fine till maybe about 4 a.m. Again, if we could spread that out to be 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. versus, you know, midnight to 4 a.m., we'd spread that peak out. But we really need to be done with the irrigation by 5 a.m. at the latest, because then we see the community come alive out there in Black Lake, and then your normal showers and toilet flushings in the morning. And what we're seeing right now, in my opinion, based on this preliminary analysis, is basically a confluence of those two peaks. We'll make system changes, but if we can also make some operational changes, that would, I think, help us. If there are any other questions on that memo, and be happy to answer those. On that, I have those two graph attachments, and then I also have just our telemetry upgrade schedule, and this is the latest I received from Mr. Anderson, and this was just as of yesterday.
but we are moving along. Not overwhelmingly happy with the schedule he's given me. I don't know if the board will recall, but I went back and looked at the original contract on this, and this is something that was originally projected to take 14 weeks. Mm-hmm. Back in August 2004.
August of last year.
Yes. Finally, I have two draft memorandums on procedures that I'm heading down the path of implementing. I would like the directors to take these draft memorandi and consider them, and I'd appreciate any inputs or feedback both today or in the next 2 weeks. But these are procedures. I've carefully worded that. I'm not asking the board to adopt new policies. One is in relationship to extremely high water bills, and I've outlined a criteria for what that would mean and what actions our procedure would require.
We may have already adopted policies. This is the deal with. Somebody comes in and says, well,
right.
We do have
in place policies that dictate that case in an overall and general sense, and that is that you pay for water that goes through your meter.
But I think in our last meeting we talked about possibly giving the general manager
some latitude.
Sort of plenary forgiveness rights.
I guess my comment is that it's always better to change the policy than it is to try to make exceptions to the policy on an ad hoc basis. So,
Well,
I guess my recommendation is that at the end of the day, if this isn't going to be a change in the written policy of the board, that we bring it back for formal approval, so we don't have conflicting.
Right. That would be the better way to have it. It's black and white. It's a policy. The customer can understand it. It does apply to everybody. For all people that come in under the same situation thing, rather than on a whenever it happens basis.
And I can review that policy and give some policy feedback to the board as to whether the policy allows, if there's any gray area in that policy right now in this regard. But one of the things we talked about last time was that the latitude I'm seeking is something that would be applied, I think, rarely, and I tried to defined rarely as to one or two incidents a year. And in fact, going back and looking at some recent incidents, I only found one that applied in recent time, and that was the one that was before you with a letter to the board just recently. My sense is that in these extreme cases, fivefold and better, your typical water bill, that we'd have people in front of the board saying, I don't know, that would, if we said, no, there's just a no mercy policy here, and that's what it is, no latitude, we'd probably get those folks in front of the board, and then it would be to the directors to hold that line, and that would be fine also. But in talking with other districts, that they felt that what happens is once, Mr. and Mrs. retired with the real sad story get up in front of the board, then the board is inclined to say, we're going to make an exception this one time for this extreme case, boy, because you have these conditions. And maybe that's the best place to make exceptions or just change that policy entirely. But
the reality is, this isn't an agenda. The reality is that somebody pays for that water.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even when you make an exception to somebody for a water leak on their side of the meter, the system is paying for that water.
The community as a whole. I'd like to say it that way.
Yeah, the community as a whole is paying for it. So, where you come down one neighbor to the next neighbor. I think that's what we want to avoid at all costs.
And if a bill is forgiven, it has to be in such a way that the next guy that gets turned down has clear reasons why he doesn't fit that specification.
Right. Yeah. And that's where we talk about this criteria. And maybe that's the best way. Is again, I have a bill that's currently in this situation. I think at this point I need to write that applicant. I had them pay their average bill for that period, and I suspended the late charges based on discussions with the board. But I think at this point I will go back to that customer and say we have a strict policy and you have to work out a payment plan, and that's how we typically do it. And then I can come back in front of the board with a policy, but I'd like to get some sense of the board's feeling on this before I put staff time into that. But the policy would be, as I've outlined here, criteria-wise, is a clear definition of what we're looking at, so that when they do come in and say, you know, my neighbor got this, and say, yes, but your neighbor was five times over their normal, and your neighbor has committed has agreed that they will never, this is the one get-out-of-jail-free card, if you will, they'll never have this again as long as they're a customer. And so that customer has to weigh and say, well, yeah, I'm only five times higher, but I don't know, someday I could be 10 times higher. Who knows? I could have some more extreme. To avoid people coming in and saying, gee, my bill's $10 higher than normal or twice as high as normal, and I'd like it to be forgiven. Well, one, you don't meet the criteria of extreme, and two, this is not something that's done.
I think we should respect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, just thoughts on that. Finally, the unmetered construction water shutoff procedure, and this will segue right into the three documents that are attached that come out of John's office. And I thought why we had members in our audience earlier, but I guess not.
No, they were here because of the
landscape
to see if they could find a precedent for making us do it there.
Yeah, do their
language. That was
although my case that I cited was the Old Town Association,
right.
They were the people I was talking to.
Perfect. Well, this has actually occurred also that, I don't know if it's just because that construction site is so far removed from the district or it's just difficult development or both, but we went through a bit of a dance, and that's what those next three letters are, with the developer out there that resulted in a shutoff of water yesterday.
Should we not adjourn to closed session?
Well, and that's all I'll say there, but then what I intend to do with this procedure is outline is to provide some support to my field staff, first of all, and that there's not been a strong procedure in place as to how the district will respond, and we've been going around saying, you know, boy, we caught you on that fire hydrant again, and next time we're going to shut you off. And instead, what I'm looking at is something along this order, three strikes, because that's what we like to do in our baseball society, I guess, but first, second, and third infractions with elevating a consequence to those infractions. Again, not an agenda item here. Giving those to the board in draft, I'd like your comments back. What he thinks on whether this is something I can do on a procedure level. My intent would be, if I get approval there, that this document becomes part of our plans and specs. This document is delivered to all current development projects and then all developers upon application, so that everyone understands where the district stands in regards to water theft through unmetered connection.
I would encourage you if you put this into some shape, mm-hmm. that for the second infraction, that you don't specify second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. You just say a regularly scheduled meeting. Because if there were any change made in our scheduling, the ordinance wouldn't fit.
Okay, with that, thank you very much, Mr. LeBrun. Do you have any other item?
Anything else on the manager's report? No, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, comments?
Mr. LeBrun. Then moving on to
committee. I lied. I'm sorry. Just real quickly, and okay. This is about Mr. Markman's appearance at our next meeting, and I just wanted to get from the board a sense of time. Now, he'll be coming in the night before. He'll be here specifically to get the directors, the board of directors approval on the draft stipulated settlement. Mm-hmm. I sent that back out via email this morning. The last two versions that have come through were not redlined, but I think in that we're coming to final on this thing, if the directors can, to whatever extent they can, to spend some time with the entire document and bring forward concerns. And I think the earlier the better. If I hear concerns, I can then convey them to Mr. Markman. In any event, what time would we like to see him Wednesday morning? We typically, he'll come in the night before, and then we'll typically have him first on the agenda. I believe in the past we've moved the start time to 8 a.m.
How long a period of time are we talking about?
With Mr. Markman?
Is an hour enough?
I would look back to the directors on this. I think...
I wouldn't think so.
What's our history here?
So 8 o'clock doesn't really work. Unless we're going to...
Yeah, it would depend. I mean, if we give them, say, an hour and a half... And we'd start our regular meeting at 9:30.
Our meeting time, though, is set by ordinance.
Mr. Sykes.
My suggestion is that we set, to the extent we can, a very light agenda for that meeting, and hopefully that we can have so that we meet them by 11.
And then do it over lunch.
Mr. Markman, that way we could have lunch. I think this is going to be important.
Yeah, I do too.
If we're going to reach resolution, I think that board on behalf of the residents is going to want to have a pretty thorough understanding of how this is all going to play out.
A very thorough discussion of the proposed settlement.
Okay, so what we'd like to do is start our regular agenda at 9, and then as soon as that's completed, then we'll go to closed session with Mr. Martin
and try and set it like.
Yeah, what we've got right now is that presentation by SAIC, and I do have one service request that could have made this agenda today, but I put them off because of I didn't know how we'd go on our budget item, so I can talk to that applicant, but I'm assuming that they'll want to be before the board. But it would be one service request, but we'll keep it minimum from there.
Okay.
I'll get back to Mr. Markman on that. Last, the land use ordinance amendment for the Craig development out adjacent to just west of Black Lake is in. We have that EIR, I mean to say, in that supports that land use ordinance amendment. I've copied the critical sections of it to John, and we both have some review to do there, but it appears that they plan on going off a well on the site.
I got that EIR and I've looked at a couple of items and I haven't read it in detail, but I looked in the summary, mm-hmm. and the summary table, it said something about the NCSD shall supply water to this development. And the wording doesn't sound right because they can't, an EIR doesn't order anybody to do something, and it sounded like an order.
Yeah,
I don't know if you caught that or not, but I'm going to read it in July because the response isn't due to July 15th or something like that.
And I've spent 15 minutes with it, and I have John's
you need to look at what it says with regard to the NCSD.
There's also something about a communication with the general manager. You know, it caught my eye because my name was in. I was like, what I say? It said that we weren't open to new service connections at this time or something. And, I know I talked with the Morrow Group who developed the CIR now. I'm not sure where that quote comes from, other than they're not within our, service area now.
I think that's a historical thing because at one time Doug Jones told him he wasn't interested in providing water to him until the SOI was determined. Well, that's four years old.
Yeah, that's water.
Right. No,
so that wasn't you.
They named me.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah, and I did have conversations with the Norwood Bonds. But anyway, it's on the street, and that's
There's a school site involved.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a large school site.
And there is another piece of the puzzle, because the well may be dedicated to Lucia Meyer School District, and when their wells over here at Dana Elementary finally give up the ghost, they may want to wheel water from there to the high school instead.
Okay, Andrew's report is really done.
Okay, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Committee report.
By the way, you give good reports, I got to tell you.
They're great.
Thanks.
Committee reports.
Cliff and I will be meeting hopefully this next week, but I've had final exams and such, so I have not got us together, but we'll do that quickly. And otherwise, there have been no committee meetings.
Okay. I don't have any committee meetings to report, so Mr. Eby, you?
I don't know of any.
Okay. Director comments. Mr. Wynn.
Okay. Just a couple of things very quickly. On Saturday, the 25th of June, will be our annual Great Patriotic Street Fair, which will be held out here in on Teff Street. Two blocks will be closed off, and there will be a detour here by the district office to go around. Would the NCSD like to have a booth at that street fair for informational purposes? We've got basically there's been no public discussion of the SOI since it was approved. We've got our rates, which people may or may not want to talk about, and we have the pipeline, all of which would be interesting material for people to talk to. The cost to us would be $80 for a booth, and directors could take turns sitting and answering or whatever.
Well,
anyway,
whatever happens.
Pardon?
Whatever happens, let's get organized, folks. It was a disaster last time.
But it's too late to get organized. We should have been doing
this. It's 3.5 weeks away.
We should have started this process months back.
I'm just saying, if we want to do it, we have time to do it. But if we don't want to, we certainly don't have to.
I don't care either way.
Okay.
I'll participate.
And because I've got another event that same day, so okay. I know last year I was one of the primary sitters there.
I won't be available. So I won't be available. So whatever you want to do, fine.
And I will be working in the chamber booth, so I think that's out. Anyway, I just wanted to put it up and let you all know about it. Secondly, the RAC meets this afternoon. It was postponed because they didn't meet the Brown Act noticing requirements for the last meeting. And the issues that come up will be the flood control zones 1 and 1A, which is over here just north of us. That's not in the district, but some of you know about it. Mm-hmm. There will be an update on the Prop 50 grants for the earworm. And I will be reporting to the RAC about the RMS impasse with the county. And I suppose we'll talk about that in closed session when we get to litigation. But there's an issue there. Next, I would like to ask that we agendize the question that Dr. Blair gave us today about the water service to his granny.
Actually, we have a response.
Is there a response already? Okay, good. Is that in closed session that we do that response?
If you say no, I can give you that response right now. Two things. He brought up a neighbor who did receive a will serve, and that is something I briefed the board on, and that neighbor situation is entirely
totally
different.
Right.
Yes, that neighbor had two meters assigned to one piece of property, and that was back in 97. So
right.
The neighbor came in, and he's got his one meter hooked to his house, and he says, I want the other meter that I already own hooked to my secondary. Mm.
I don't think we need to go to... Let me just say this. The district has a response, a written response to Mr. Blair's letter, and it'll be available for the board to review once it's issued. I don't think we need to.
go through the...
I have a copy of Title 19, and I'd be glad to send it to you if you want to read it.
Right.
We don't. Our response doesn't even have to reflect on Title 19. I don't think it does.
No.
I haven't seen
it. Well, it does. It does. It does in a way, but
okay.
It's ready.
Okay, good. I don't want us to just have him keep coming back here and talking to us. And we
right.
need to move on.
Veered away.
Next, we have funded in recent years a Creek Day that was held here on an annual basis, and it had to do with cleaning out trash and such here in the waterways and such, and to help with the bait flooding and this and that. This year, the Salmon Enhancement do not want to get involved, and they're going to be looking for some local leadership if it's going to happen at all. And I would recommend that we step up to the plate. We're the primary funding agency. Larry and I both have been involved in this over the years, and I think it would be a nice way for the NCSD to sort of step out into the public in a way that demonstrates our commitment to this. Anyway, I don't mean to start a discussion on it today.
Yeah, I just want to give you a brief update. They're not going to have the education fair portion of it. They'll still be creek cleaning, just not having the booze and so on and so forth. And Native Garden will still have their plant sale.
My concern only is that we have funded this now for 3-4 years in a row, at least. 3 years, I guess.
Three.
And they have never met the specifications of the grant.
Of our funding.
Of our funding. They have never done it. They do not include us in the planning. They do spend the money on issues that are outside of the district's purview. And this last year, they did a very poor job of organizing cleanup. They left refuse right here within throwing, of the district. So whatever happens, either we help organize it or we don't fund it is going to be my suggestion. Anyway, we'll put that out there. And then I have a question for staff. When is our next solid waste cleanup week? We have two of those a year, and I don't know where it falls in the calendar, but people are beginning to ask me, my wife in particular.
Look through your back bills, and it'll say, it'll be on one of the bills, it'll say the proposed cleanups for this year are, April or March, and the one in the fall, it'll be on there. They used to send out a flyer, which made it very obvious. Now it's just on the bill, it's printed in about the number 8 font.
I think it's important for us, because this was important to us and we wanted it included in our contract, I think it's important for us to put newspaper notices or some such thing fairly large so people take advantage of it.
Yeah, and that's not been happening like it did the first year.
I'll contact the garbage company and report back to the board on that specific.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you have to purposely look for it in your bills.
We can work on that.
Okay. Mr. Eby, direct your comments?
Oh, let's see.
Larry, I would like to relate something here that's occurred to the Trotter family. Last week, I was working in the yard, and a gas company truck pulled up, and the fellow got out. He said, "I'm here to turn your gas off." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "We got a call to turn your gas off." I said, "I didn't call. Leave the gas on." So everything was fine. Yesterday we came home, the gas is off with a lock on the valve. Called, fellow came out at 8 o'clock last night and said, "We got a phone call to turn your gas off." Now the only thing I can surmise here, because I've grown to pay my bills the day I get them, to eliminate that possibility. There's a mole out there somewhere. I've gotten 3 or 4 anonymous phone calls. I think they're residents of Black Lake. You know, they won't identify themselves. And somebody's playing some dirty tricks out there. So now I have a password. They'll only turn the gas off if I give my password.
But Clerks, you brought it on yourself and you jacked their rates up like that.
The only worry I have now, my sweet wife Carol has got to memorize the password. So far, she's failed. So I don't know what to do. In any regard, it's a kind of amusing thing, but very inconvenient.
I guess.
Wait till you get your water shut off.
Yeah, if we get any calls to shut your water off, I'll make sure to call you first. No password needed.
I'll give you my password.
Okay.
Mr. Eby.
Let's see, I hope to go to the RAC meeting today. It's at 1:30, so I hope to get home in time to eat and go.
Right.
There was a Save the Mesa meeting last week, and Michael gave a presentation I thought was very good. A couple of the questions that were asked from the audience were, when will supplemental water be in our pipeline, and how certain are you of that date, and how much will the supplemental water project cost, and how certain of you are you of that number? Now, I won't say I planted those questions, but I was interested more in the answer to the question. I was interested in the why we aren't certain, and I think we're starting to get the answers today. In the thing you mentioned in here, you got Cannon looking into the planning, the time, the cost, the schedule. So I'm glad to see that, and so in the future, you'll have
better answer.
That answer. You'll say, we don't have it. Our certainty is zero, but in 6 months it'll be 95%. That's all.
Okay, well, I just have a quickie. In this past Friday's Adobe, there was a photo and a brief article that the Five Cities Orchid Society, through their fundraising for the Lisa Ann Rushburn Foundation, donated $1,812. And I want to thank all of you who bought tickets or even wanted to buy tickets but were unable, and for participating in raising that much money. So thank you. And with that, we will now go into closed session. Mr. Seitz.
Thank you. There are three items on the agenda. I'm not sure we're going to get through all of them, but the first one is the groundwater adjudication. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, this is Santa Maria versus Napomo Community Service District et al. At the Santa Clara County Courthouse or Superior Courthouse. The next one is conference with legal counsel, and this is Maria Vista versus NCSD. And the last one on the agenda is conference with legal counsel, and this is NCSD versus the County of San Luis Obispo. This is the Summit Station litigation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. At this time, I would like to open it to public comment on any of the closed session items. Again, time is limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board, and we will adjourn to closed session.
How are the settlement?
I'm turning the recording on. We are recording.
Okay. Mr. Seitz.
Yes, we did adjourn to closed session. We did discuss two cases in closed session, the Maria Vista case and the general groundwater adjudication case. In both instances, we heard an update from legal counsel. The board did ask questions, but took no reportable action.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. With that, this meeting is now adjourned.
And, John, when does the Summit Station thing go to court?
We have